Well, we look at a set of computations that we call the dynamic sparse computations. So this set of computations involve solving for a large number of unknowns where the sparse components are known a priori. So we look at how we can exploit this sparsity inside the computation so we can parallelize this. So this is joint work with my colleague Steve Tarsa and also my advisor, Professor H.T. Kohn. Okay, so just as I just said, we want to parallelize this set of sparse computations where the sparse components are not known a priori. So the question we ask is really, how do we exploit this sparsity that we can really only focus our computation on these sparse components? And they are usually only identified at runtime. So this is usually an iterative process that in every iteration you are going to find a few sparse components, but you just don't know where they are. And this is also very important for a large set of applications, which include in signal processing and also machine learning. So I will begin with just tell you about the applications that involves dynamic sparse computations, and then I will go into details of the computation. The first example I'm going to give you is in compressive sensing. So compressive sensing concerns about how do you sample a sparse signal that only have a few important unknowns. So it says when you want to sample these signals with only a few important unknowns, you can do random linear combinations. Then with only a few of these, we call it compressed measurements, which is only a few combinations, you can actually have sufficient information to recover this signal. But this recovery process is non-trivial. Usually involve many iterations of guessing and try to refine the problem and try to estimate the value of these peaks. So one example application of compressive sensing is the MRI. So in dynamic MRI, when you try to use MRI to capture, say, here is a brain image over time, then you get sparsity over the frequency domain, also the sparsity over the time domain. Then this 3D signal can easily be very large. So for example, here if we have 40 MRI time frame, each time frame is 100 by 100, then you easily get a signal size which is 400K. But within these 400K unknowns, you probably only have less than 10% of non-zero values inside. The second application I'm going to show you is in machine learning. So machine learning concerns about finding sparse representations of a signal. So here we get, when you try to do image processing, you get an image patch, and all you want to do is find a representation that can represent this image patch. A good representation, however, is usually very sparse. So that means you want to represent your image patch using only a few of these edge-like detectors. And you can do this process over multiple hierarchy. So for example, if we want to do face detection, we can find high-level feature descriptors, which is not only the edges, maybe involve a picture that's like having the eyes, nose, and mouth in the right place. So this training process can involve a lot of computations. So for example, Google recently just trained a face detector by using only YouTube videos, and they use 10 million of these images. Each image is 200 by 200 size. So this is a lot of computations. And I believe Google used 3 days and over 10,000 machines to train. Okay.
Were all the images facing you in the same size?
So in a simpler case, that's the case. But I think Google, they claim they use random YouTube videos. So that's even more fancier than this. Okay, so now I'm going to give you a little bit more detail of this type of computations. So the canonical example of this type of computation is to solve a under-constrained linear system. So you can see here, we are given in the sense of compressed sensing, we get the measurement vector X, which is the linear combination you get. In the sensing matrix D, which you use this matrix as coefficients for taking random linear combinations. And you want to try to solve this target signal Z vector, which is longer than the length of X. In machine learning, in the sparse coding sense, then the X will be your data vector, which is your image, And the D is your dictionary. That's the HLAC detector or the patches. And the Z is your sparse representation. So given X and D, usually in basic linear algebra, we know this is not solvable because this is under constraint. But suppose D is some well-behaved. So usually we say if D is sufficiently incoherent, then you can solve Z by solving an optimization problem, which can be minimizing the L1 norm of Z. You probably heard of this before. But we are going to take a different approach. We are using a more efficient algorithm that's iterative and is called OMP that recovers Z. So what OMP does is it has two loops, one outer loop and one inner loop. In the outer loop, it identifies the non-zero components in your target vector. See, first make a guess on the possible location of these non-zero unknowns. In the inner loop, it can reduce the size of the problem size to an over-constrained one, and then you can easily solve this inner loop problem. And just by iteratively refining the guess and solving for their values, then it quickly can converge to the right solution. Okay. So how do we parallelize this algorithm? So one way to parallelize this is to map the algorithm to a graphical model. So if you map this algorithm, that will be a bipartite graph. So here we will get the components of Z will be one side of the graph, and the component of X will be the other side of the graph. And the D matrix will be the adjacency matrix of the graph, will be the edges. So the computation will become a ping-pong operation. You start from one side of the graph, which might be Z, and then after you finish the computation of the Z, you send the values to the other side, which is X. And by sending the value, you can compute, if you flow the values from the bottom to the top, you compute DZ. If you flow from the top to the bottom, you compute D transpose X. So by exchanging the values back and forth, eventually it will converge to the right solution you're looking for. Two more things I want to point out in the graph is the components of Z is way more than the components of X, so which is the under constraint problem I described before. And second of all, most of the components of Z are going to be zero, are going to have zero values. So if we can focus the computation only on the non-zeros on the of Z, then we can save a lot. So to parallelize using the graphical model, we can simply just split the graph to multiple machines. And there are several parallelization API that allows us to do this, such as GraphLab. Okay, so what really happened in OMP inside the bipartite graph can be looked in this way. So the outer loop, when we try to guess the identity of the non-zero components, we essentially compute a score for every single Z.
Are you going to talk about the choice of graph partition, or do you just refer to something like GraphLab?
Yeah, I just refer to something like GraphLab. We're trying to improve GraphLab. Yeah, so. Yes.
Oh,
yes, they do. They do. Okay. We can talk about this later. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Awesome.
Okay. So in the outer loop, we need to compute a score for every single Z. So that's essentially activating all the Z vertices and try to get a score. In the inner loop, after we identify these vertices, we can only select a subgraph and perform the computation in the subgraph. And after a few more iterations, we can estimate their values. So we can just keep going back and forth between the outer loop and inner loop. So the problem we're going to solve here is, for efficiency reason, we want to limit our computation only on the selected subgraph and only on these non-zero components. But we don't know them when we begin the computation because they are only revealed during the computation process. So we propose two primitives to help us do this. So one works in the outer loop, which is called statistical barrier, that we can identify these non-zero unknowns without having to wait for stragglers. The second one we call is selective push-pull, that we can focus computation only on the selected subgraph. So I'm going to go into more details about these two primitives. Okay, so the first one is called statistical barrier. So normally, when we try to perform computations on this bipartite graph, we have to wait for completion of one side of the graph, and then we can move on to the computation on the other side. But remember, we have a large number of z vertices here. So that means if there are stragglers, then we may have to wait for the worst, the slowest machine to finish. And that could make our completion time way longer than what we expect. So this is an example of straggler. But we know there are only a few non-zero components in the z's. So finish a large fraction of z is likely to capture all these non-zeros. So we may be able to just go ahead the computation, forget about the others if they are too slow, and maybe the set of finished z's already captured the sparse non-zeros. And furthermore, this algorithm is robust to missing values. It's an iterative one. So even if we happen to ignore some of these z's, which are the non-zeros, we can still fix them in the following iterations. So this allows us to give a different synchronization barrier, which is not 100%. It can be 80% of the barrier. We can say if 80% of the z's finish computation, then we move on. So this 80%, this is a parameter we have to carefully design. So this will be related to the straggler distribution of the data center. If there are more stragglers, then you probably want to make the barrier more flexible. Right. So designing this algorithm, designing this barrier, usually we need to do some profiling on the algorithm itself.
So is this percentage count sensitive to the input data set?
Sorry.
Is this percentage count sensitive to the input data set? In that if your data set changes, then you have to again change the percentage count threshold.
I think it's only sensitive to the sparsity of the data set. So that means the number of non-zeros in the data set. So I think we can have different. So this is a very simple example. This is saying we only randomly pick, say we observe random 80% of the these to finish. We can have a different policy, say we want to avoid keeping ignoring the same z's. So that can solve the skew data set problem. More questions? Okay. For the second primitive, we call it selective push-pull, is on how we can select a subgraph to perform computation. So usually subgraph selection will involve vertex selection and also edge selection. Since the number of edges inside the graph is huge, if we do edge selection, this is not going to be a scalable solution. So we try to propose a primitive that can solve this problem. So with selective push pull, we can avoid edge selection completely. So it works like this. We first select a subset of z's where we believe they are non-zeros. And then these z's will push the values to the x to perform the pin-pon operation. And after the x get the values and perform computations, instead of pushing the value back to all the z's, we ask the z's to pull the value back again. So instead of a push-pull paradigm or a pull-pull paradigm, this is a push-pull paradigm. So the programmers can easily program still every single vertex and do not need to worry about the edge selection problem. Okay, so we build these two primitives on GraphLab, and we evaluate the performance of selective push-pull on the Amazon EC2 cluster. So in this experiment, we vary the problem size of our sparse recovery. So that's the overall number of unknowns, but we keep the number of sparse components, which is the non-zeros, to constant. So this figure shows
the result of using the current state-of-the-art graph lab, which only supports a static graph. So with a static graph, that means when we increase the problem size, the total number of computations also increase. So we can see the computation time grows linearly with the problem size. However, if we use the selective push-pull, that means we try to limit the overall computation to the subgraph. Since the sparsity is constant, that means the number of involved vertices is still constant. So we see a constant, we see the computation time stays constant with different problem size. And this is what we expect to see, because the real computation is constant. We also evaluate the statistical barrier, but we only do it in a simulation because we need the statistics for strugglers. So we get the statistics from Microsoft Bing cluster, and in this cluster, the struggler problem is pretty bad, because we see 25% of the jobs can see up to 10x of the completion time. So if we use a rigid barrier, which is we have to wait for all the Z's to finish, then we see the OMP completion time can have a widespread, because when you hit a struggler, then the completion time will be longer. But if we use 95% barrier, that means when we don't have to wait for the worst struggler and just move on the computation, the completion time can be a lot faster. However, this might not always be good, because when we ignore some of the strugglers, we may need to use more iterations to finish the computation. So when we use 75% barrier, that would be too aggressive, and that additional iterations can hurt. So that's why we think we need to do some profiling before we can deploy this, and that would need the struggler statistics. Okay. So finally, I just want to give you one more example that generalized this idea. So this might in this setting, this is not the same as just solving an under-constrained linear system, but we can still use these two primitives to do the parallelization. So in this example, the computation is that we want to do feature extraction. So given a lot of image patches, in this case, it's the X matrix, where each image patch is a column. Then we want to find not only their sparse representation, which is the Z vector, we only want to find a dictionary matrix. So the computation is to do a matrix factorization that, given the X, we want to find D and Z. And it's a simple way to do this computation is to alternate between solving for D and solving for Z. So you begin with a guess on the Z, you solve for D. And then given the new D, you can use this new D to estimate Z. So by breaking these two matrices into this bipartite graph model, where you break the rows of the D matrix into vertices and break the columns of Z matrix into the Z vertices, then you can still perform this ping-pong operation to estimate the value of D and Z. So in the updating Z phase, it's the same as just activating all the Z vertices and ask them to perform this sparse coding. And when we update D, we only need to select a subset of the Z that's related to this dictionary atom because they are sparse. Then we essentially have a subgraph that we need to do computation. So this is the same as the previous OMP computation I described to you, that you can use the statistical barrier to skip strugglers in the update Z phase. And you can use selective push-pull to perform computation only on the subgraph. So finally, we have in this work, we have identified this class of computation we call dynamic sparse computation. And to parallelize this class of computation, we have two primitives. One is called the statistical barrier. The other is the selective push-pull. And they are pretty important for applications in machine learning and also signal processing. So that's all.
it possible that if the barrier is too aggressive, the algorithm may not converge?
Yes. So yeah, that it is possible. So in our experience, you usually don't want to have a barrier less than 75%. So all these curves, we give a fixed error value. So all of these computations will run until they hit the error threshold. Right.
So I have a question. This might be future work, but do you have ideas for how you might automatically determine the barrier value? You said profiling, but do you have any insight into like what things you would want to look at that would be especially important for doing that?
We actually, currently we don't have that. Yeah. I don't know, because we, the most effective way we have currently is just profiling, because that really depends on how the algorithm converges. Yes, just forget it.
Are you worried at all about forgetting about all of
your nodes
eventually?
So that's the policy of the barrier. So if we say 80%, then we have to guarantee 80% of them already finished.
So what about nodes that are slowly catching up? Is that
Sorry, can you say that again? So you don't wait for them to catch up, you just ignore them. And it just if they finish, I still don't worry about the results.
So there was this work that Mark Reiner did in Upsilon in 2007 on moving phase termination. So it seems like it's similar in flavor, but maybe I don't understand the differences. It's one of the differences that his approach just terminates the barrier when you hit some point and then you move on. And so every node still has a chance.
So it's very. So we believe it's very similar in this flavor. So, but his motivation is more like more in the approximation computing. So he only concerned about finding approximate result. So you can just terminate, and then say this is good enough. I'm going to take this as my result. Where we still try to find a solution that's below some error threshold. So we have this trade-off.
So you're sort of adding this convergence criteria.
Right. We don't.
Okay.
So I think we can talk about this later.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll find you.